A mentor, almost by definition, is somebody who has been down the path before you. And typically in the business realm, it means if you want to be a sales and marketing executive, then you want to have a mentor, a human being, who is already a sales and marketing executive. In other words, somebody who has gone through the battles, the trials, and the tribulations that are likely to be in your path ahead. You know, when we climb a mountain, don't we often stop and say to our fellow travelers, what's it like up ahead?
Mm-hmm.
Is it raining? Is the path steep? Is it dangerous?
Sure.
Well, a mentor, in my mind, is very similar. Somebody who is not going to put you in their image exactly, but somebody's going to give you the benefit of their knowledge.
Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. If you're new to our channel, please consider subscribing to it and hit the bell icon so that you never miss an update. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm in conversation with a very, very successful executive life and business coach from Boston, USA, Rob Kanza. Rob, welcome to the show.
Ashutosh, it's great to be here.
Thank you. As I just mentioned, Rob is an executive life and business coach. He has, for 40 years, brought his unique perspective and inspiring guidance to people yearning for more effective methods at interpersonal communication and inner peace. And he has been trained by the legend of coaches, Marshall Rosenberg. Rob, let's talk about coaching. I mean, that's something that is right up your street. So for a lot of our young audience, tell me, what is coaching and why has it become so important all over the world?
Ashutosh, that's a great question, and it's a conversation I never get tired of. Going into the world of coaching is an energizing field, and here's why. I believe deeply that all of us seek the feeling of being alive, having a sense of purpose and contribution. And many young people understand coaching from a sports perspective.
Correct.
Here in America, where football is so popular, we celebrate the coach who rallies together the team to get a common goal to win and make touchdowns and score points and so forth. But personal and executive coaching means winning at the game of business and winning at the game of life. So often in our culture, we are raised to compete, but we miss training in one vital area. And this is where life coaching comes in. Life coaching asks us the question, where do you come alive? You know, the name of your program is The Brand Called You.
Correct.
We might say that my coaching is the life that you are meant to live.
Wonderful.
And this is what coaching is all about.
Terrific. So, you know, I've often been asked this question, what is the difference between coaching and mentoring? I'd love to get your perspective.
Well, Ashutosh, that's another great question, and I get it all the time. In fact, I contemplate myself, as I've been coaching for 40 years, what are some of these distinctions? To me, mentoring and coaching are aligned for sure. But if we wanted to make a distinction, there's a few that come to my mind. The first is a mentor, almost by definition, is somebody who has been down the path before you. And typically in the business realm, it means if you want to be a sales and marketing executive, then you want to have a mentor, a human being, who is already a sales and marketing executive. In other words, somebody who has gone through the battles, the trials, and the tribulations that are likely to be in your path ahead. You know, when we climb a mountain, don't we often stop and say to our fellow travelers, what's it like up ahead?
Mm-hmm.
Is it raining? Is the path steep? Is it dangerous? Sure. Well, a mentor, in my mind, is very similar. Somebody who is not going to put you in their image exactly, but somebody's going to give you the benefit of their knowledge. And then I could tell you a little bit about how I think coaching is slightly complementary and distinct. Should I do that now?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So for me, coaching not only asks to share the information of what's down the line in the future, but coaching is a deep spiritual practice of being present now. A coach will ask somebody, in my sessions, for example, do you notice what you're feeling? Are you aware of your breath? Are you aware of your thinking? And why, young people and old people alike might say, why is being present to the present moment so important? Well, in coaching, the whole idea is to become aligned with who you are, why you were born. And some people think, whoa, my God, these are heavy topics. But it doesn't have to be heavy. It can be lighthearted. It can be a fun journey. So these are some of the distinctions between mentoring and coaching. There are a few more that I can tell you as the program proceeds.
Fascinating. So let's move on to, you know, your specialization, which is some, you know, interpersonal communication and, of course, life coaching. Let's talk interpersonal communication. Based on all your experience, what are some of the common errors a lot of people make when communicating with one another?
The first one comes to mind, I think, is familiar to most of us. In communication, we've been trained in a game called who's right. We tend toward arguing, and we think that by arguing in the beginning, we will get our point across and we will persuade the other person. Husbands, have you ever tried this with your wife?
Always happens.
It doesn't work. It always happens. And yet, we husbands, we men who are in relationships, we are so certain if we just explain the reasonableness and the logic. So, to answer your question, Ashutag, this is one of the primary general mistakes that most of us make. While the other person is talking, what are we doing? We're forming our argument of how to come back, either say something snappy or profound. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't have constructive argument, but the number one mistake people make is they lead with argument instead of listening. And I'll tell you, there are two main things in listening. Number one, what is the emotion that the other person is experiencing?
Right.
Don't pay too much attention to their exact words. And number two, what are the needs behind that emotion?
Correct.
If people can shift from argumentation in the beginning to listening for feelings and needs in the beginning, your chances of having good connection go way up.
Very interesting. Very, very interesting. So what you're really saying, you know, as I was taught when I by my father, was that put yourself in the other person's shoes and try and understand what he or she wants to communicate to you. So that's exactly what you're saying, isn't it?
It's age-old wisdom, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And your father was a very accomplished man, and one of the reasons why he was able to accomplish so much, I'm sure, was because he had the philosophy of this kind of compassionate listening.
Well said. And tell me, in terms of the corporate world, I mean, you know, we all hear all the time that, you know, my boss doesn't listen to me, or, you know, my shareholders are not listening to me, or my board is not listening to me. What is your view on what should really be the communication strategy when large company CEOs are talking to shareholders or stakeholders or employees or whatever else?
That's a beautiful question and so expansive. And I think it dovetails on what we were just discussing. There's a kind of dance in communication. Now, the people who are professional psychological researchers will tell you that CEOs as profiled generally, although not completely and not always, mm-hmm. tend towards driving over people and pushing forward in absolute terms. It's their job to get things done. Can we have compassion, even though we can't stand when the CEO treats us a certain way, mm-hmm. seems to not care about us personally?
Correct.
Can we have compassion? Why? Can we speak to the CEO and say, gee, CEO, seems like these things are very important to you. Yeah. They're absolutely important. I've got lots of, right? And again, to allow for the listening. There's a reason why we have a cliche that we've all heard. It's lonely at the top.
Correct.
So it almost sounds reverse of what we might expect. Mm-hmm. Some of my clients will say to me, exactly to your point, mm-hmm. I can't stand this. I can't stand my boss. They're not paying attention to me.
Yeah.
But have you ever taken the time to invite your boss for a cup of coffee and to listen and ask him about his children?
Correct.
No, I never did that. Mm. We think because we're an employee, we buy into this top-down communication, and unwittingly, we cement it into place by having this negative impression instead of seeing the other as a human being. That's so amazing. In my training that I do with corporations is instead of one person sitting here and one person sitting here, we all sit in a circle.
Mm. Very interesting. And, you know, I have seen this personally when I was running large companies, that a lot of senior people are not able to communicate well in a boardroom. They're not able to make presentations well. What happens to them? I mean, you know, is it stage fright?
I think it can be so many things. Mm-hmm. I think it harkens back to what we were talking about before and what you so eloquently conveyed from your father. Mm-hmm. Even in a boardroom situation, even when we are giving presentations to shareholders or VCs or whoever it might be, mm-hmm. we must stop partway through our conversation to breathe, to make some eye contact, mm-hmm. to be with the other person, and to ask some questions.
Correct.
How are we doing so far? Mm. Are you with me? What questions do you have? Am I meeting your needs and your expectation? Sometimes we get so distraught in, I have to make a perfect presentation. It's all about the content. It's almost like it's all about the argument. Mm. Very similar, you see? It's not that we don't want to have an argument or content. Of course, content is important. Of course, you have to be an expert in your field. Mm. But you're not talking to a computer. Mm. You're talking to a person. Whether the person is a worldwide CEO or not, they also have needs, the need for engagement. I'm the president of Lexington Toastmasters, and it's the same teaching to the people in my club. Mm-hmm. You're not the star of the presentation. Your audience is the star.
Well said. Mm.
Does it make sense?
Absolutely. And that's such an amazing perspective, that your audience is the star and not you. And if presenters could understand this, it would make all the difference. Wonderful.
Yes.
So, Rob, my next question to you is about authentic communication and listening. We have spoken a little bit about, you know, leaders not listening and subordinates not listening, etc. But how does one improve, especially if you're an introvert?
Hmm. Wow, that's a great question. I think that deep down, we are all hungry to just be ourselves. Mm-hmm. Yes, we want to be part of the group, but we also want to be celebrated for the unique individual that we are. So that means taking the risk of standing up and speaking in front of the group in your own voice, less concerned about how you look and come across, but more concerned, are my words in resonance with my own heart? Now, here's the thing. It is absolutely risky. There's no two ways about it. You know, when Gandhi stood up before the British Empire, you know, he spoke in a very quiet voice.
Correct.
But he spoke from his heart. That is irresistible. When an audience member or thousands of people can hear, this isn't a canned speech. This isn't a used car salesman speaking to me. This is somebody speaking from their heart with true emotion.
Correct.
And they're moved. This is a big part of authentic communication. I don't know if Gandhi was an introvert. I know he was quietly, he was a quiet speaker. So the question of introversion is a good one. I've met men who lead multi-billion dollar divisions, and they have confessed in front of the whole group how uncomfortable they are, and they are an introvert, but they're expected to lead. And they said, in essence, they didn't say the words, I'm scared, but you could tell this person didn't really enjoy speaking, but he was committed to his corporation's mission, and he was committed to bring on people of color. He was committed to authentic communication. And the story that he told was that he disciplined himself to get over his own fear. And when people see in a champion humble beginnings that they overcame, this is, again, irresistible. We cheer for somebody that overcomes their difficulty. So introverts of the world, have hope. Correct. You can practice and you can overcome these fears.
Terrific. So my next question to you, Rob, now is that if I am looking for a coach, what should I look for?
I think there are a few things to look for. While it's important to do due diligence and check the person's background and get recommendations from others, just as you would in any shopping for a consultant.
Correct.
I think a life and business coach is a little bit more deeply seated in the fact that you'll be discussing things that are very intimate, maybe about your family or fears. As we talked about, the fear of approaching the CEO or the board or the VCs. So in order to find the right life and business coach for you, you must not just listen to the words that the coach says that are inspiring, but you have to look inside and say, is this the kind of man or woman that I can be open with? Do I feel safe on this journey? And I think that's going to be a primary consideration before you hire a coach.
Fantastic. And a follow-up question, and I've often been asked this question, how do I, as a coachee, evaluate my coach after a certain period of time?
That's a great question. I'm thinking back to a director of R&D at a medical device company I was coaching with, and also somebody in the semiconductor industry. And they both almost said the same thing. They said, Rob, you're great. I could talk to you forever. You're an interesting guy, but I'm in business. How do I know this is going to be a worthwhile investment?
Correct.
And I said, well, each of you have told me you are numbers guys. So give me some numbers that you want to achieve, but also tell me this. Isn't it true that in business, it's not just numbers, but there's also feelings, right? When a team feels cohesive, it's kind of hard to describe that magical chemistry of how people. So I said to both of them, we're going to work together for a 9-month engagement. Let's list two columns Column number one are whether it's the production number and reducing waste in the factory, or gross billables, or, you know, quarterly profits, whatever. Mm-hmm. Let's list the numbers that you're shooting for that are objective, that are public, that anybody could see them. You can't argue with the numbers. Mm-hmm. But let's also list all of the subjective measurements, which are very hard to describe. Is the team working well together? Mm. Are people safe to object in front of their superior executives? Mm. List all of the feeling objectives. Mm-hmm. And in that way, a business person will say, that makes sense. You're hired.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So, Rob, I'm now going to move to the next segment of our conversation, which are a few questions for you. Because we found that a lot of our viewers and listeners love to listen to some responses to get to know the speaker better. So my first question for you is that in a life of 40 years that you have worked as a coach, what would you say are three key milestones or pivot points?
Well, if we divided my life into three parts, I would say, working backwards. Mm-hmm. In my present life, a key for me, because I'm in a long-term committed relationship, mm-hmm. is learning how to have peace at home. And particularly in the time of COVID, mm-hmm. as you can see, I'm working here in the master bedroom. Mm-hmm. You have to have peace in your home if you're going to be working at home.
Absolutely.
So having the right partner, the behind-the-scenes support of friends, mm-hmm. Staying in shape in the gym, all of the things that make up a healthy and happy lifestyle, mm-hmm. support me in being a good coach.
Okay.
Now, if I go backwards in time, I think of when I was in high school and college. I think a big turning point for me was this conundrum I faced. For example, being the co-captain of my soccer team, mm-hmm. we made tremendous gains. The school had never had a good soccer team, mm-hmm. and yet we were able to win the Dual County League Championship, which was amazing. And when I look back, I saw two things. I saw many of my teammates said, Rob, the way you speak to us on the team, you encourage us on the field, we can always hear where the ball is going. It's because of you we're winning the games. But there were a few people that said things like, Rob, will you shut up? Will you stop talking all the time? Stop bossing us around? And I was shocked. Why didn't everybody understand I'm speaking this way for the benefit of the whole team? And during that part of my life, throughout high school and college and being a young man in business, mm-hmm. I was very innocent. And I thought, why doesn't everybody love me all the time? I'm doing this from my heart. So I think to answer your question, the turning point was very gradual, mm-hmm. and maybe it's even going on now,
sure.
which is to say this, not everybody in the world is going to love me in every moment.
Correct.
And in fact, instead of saying, why doesn't everybody like me? Mm-hmm. I'm now at a posture 30 years later, 35 years later, saying, this is the way it is. And to be fascinated and curious instead of combative and defensive. Mm. So I would say those are maybe the three
areas. Fabulous. I've got time for only one more question.
Oh, okay.
And my, you know, in a life well lived, you know, and you and I are probably the same kind of vintage. As you look back at life, what does success mean to Rob?
I know I'm successful when I'm expending my energy and every day I feel alive and joyful. Mm-hmm. Now, it's true that each passing year I've been a little bit more financially successful. And that's definitely in the back of my mind. But I think we all know that we have billionaires and multimillionaires who are miserable. This is not success to me. This is just money. Now, we also have millionaires and billionaires that are happy. For me, it's a personal decision. Money is kind of a funny and difficult subject. And maybe we could have a whole program talking about the meaning of money.
Absolutely.
But for me, to be happy and healthy and joyful and peace of mind, that's success.
Fantastic. Rob, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure and a privilege speaking to you. Thank you for taking me down this amazing journey of coaching, life coaching, communication. Thank you again and good luck.
Ashutosh, thank you so much. God bless.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.